Welcome back. We're on Talmud Daleim and Beis. We're going to talk about the Machlokes. Rabbi Yochanan.
64b.
Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar regarding the Machlokes. We had in the Mishnah that if you put the vines over your friend's wheat, so the Mishnah said a Machlokes, right? The Mishnah was back on Samach Gimel, just to refresh your memories. On some of Gimel on the base, the Mishnah Halacha Gimel, it said, "Hamasachik final gavet vaser shalaveirai." Tanakama holds it's been kaddishet and answers it, and you have in the achrayes. And Rabbi Yitzchak and Shimon say, "No, a person can be makdish dover shein shaloi." So then Rabbi Yosi brings a story, and somebody went ahead and he made a climb on shvius. He took his vines on shvius and put them over his friend's wheat, and yeah, obviously, Shvius is a time when everything's really hefker. So, and the Maisa came in front of Rabbi Akiva, and he said, "Einon makdish dover shein shaloi." So that seemed Rabbi Yosi is bringing this story as a raya to his to their position. Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Shimon hold you can't be asked for something that doesn't belong to you. So just like you can't be makadosh something that doesn't belong to you, so too by Shvius doesn't belong to you. It's hefker, so therefore it's still mutter. Okay, that's what the Mishnah says. And the Gemara says like this: On Rabbi Yochanan. 164b2. But everybody agrees, the whole machlokes is legabi the wheat. But the anovim, in other words, the person that's taking the vine and putting it on his friend's wheat, he owns that vine. So for him, that's not davar sheinu shelo. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, everybody's going to agree that his grapes are attacking going to be usher. And Rav Lazar disagrees. He says the reason why I want to do this Gemara tonight is because these words are yesod gadol in the whole Masechta. This line is, mamish, you have to remember this line. Amalei Rav Lazar, ha'oyser eno nasar, that which made it forbidden does not become oser itself, referring to the wheat. Ha'eno oser, and that which is not the one which created the iser, namely the grapes, Nesar should become Aser. This is a very strange statement. Like the way the Rosh Sirio says, he says, Koshalaholmo, look at his language, Koshalaholmo, the Shneim Oisrim and Asarim Havo. They both become Aser and they both become Aser. What does he mean? That which Asers and that which.
How do you decide which one was the one that
Aser? How do you decide, right? So the Vilna Gaon gives the pshat here, which I think is a soid gadol. He says, look at the pasuk. Sizu chakam v'chaklayim, pengtitash hamleya asher tizra usvuas hakarim. Look at the way the pasuk formulates the iser. Don't plant klayim, lest the wheat, that which you plant, the outside seed, become aser, pengtitash, Leah Hazera, Usvua Sakarim, and also the fruit of the vine. So the vine is not the Oser. The Pasuk is telling me the Oser is the wheat.
Doesn't matter which one you plant first.
Well, I you're asking questions. I'm just telling you, this is the way, obviously it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No. We're going to assume now it doesn't matter. But that's
this comment really means you can't make they both have to have the same status.
Hold that thought for a second. But what it for sure is saying, what you're saying, it might be true what you're saying, it might not be true. What he's for sure saying though is that if the original Oser, which is the wheat, does not become Oser, you can't tell me that the grapes are Oser. That can't be, because if you're telling me that the wheat's not Osir, then we don't have Klayim. If we don't have Klayim, then there's no reason for the grapes to be Osir. That's Rav Lazar's Taina. Okay, let's just hold it right there for a minute. So Ma Pligin, the Gemara says, when they argue, that's if you're the owner of the vine, and you put your vine over your friend's wheat. Now, let's go 65, today's page. What it was the other way. I take Shabsi's vine and I put it over my wheat. Okay, so I'm taking a davar she'eino shali, putting it over a davar that is shali. What will be the din then? Kol ama moidi shaha eiser nesar. Then everybody would agree, even Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon would agree, what? That the grain would become osir. Because the grain, after all, I own the grain. Right? So I took your vine, put it over my grain. I have a kayak over my grain. Since grain is the ikar nesa, the ikar osir, I can create wine on that grain.
In that case, the grapes don't become osir because of that wine?
That's machlokes rishonim. Footnote 1, Rishonim disagree to whether the grain is prohibited or whether the grapevine is also prohibited. Ravan and Rash maintain that since the grain becomes prohibited, the grapevine also becomes klein and is rendered prohibited. They explain, although the grapevine does not belong to the perpetrator, since the perpetrator physically handled it in the process of creating the klein, it too is prohibited. And there's a Gemara and Kulin like that. Okay. The Rambam in Hilchos Kalayim, Parakei Halacha Ches, and the Rush, they hold no. Only the grain which is owned by the perpetrator is rendered prohibited. The grapevine, which is not owned by me, cannot be rendered prohibited, even though it's Kalayim because of the grain. This is unbelievable. This is an unbelievable yesoidistic thing. I felt this is just so important for the Masechta, that we couldn't just skip over it. Do you agree with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as long as we're in agreement. Okay.
Isn't there an Indian of Gezel? Taking somebody else's property.
You're talking about trespassing? What are you talking about? Where is the Gezel?
You're Magbia, Moshech the Geffen.
Taking the Geffen. First of all, Kaka and Gezel, as long as it's equivalent to Kaka, it probably has a lot like Kaka.
Right.
Probably, and second of all.
So you think it has a thing karka?
Yeah, I don't think it has a lot. Yeah.
So you can't steal.
I don't think that's called stealing, moving someone's branch from one place to another. I don't think so.
Diminishing the value of the stuff, it's grubber.
What diminishing what value? If you hold its osir.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you hold its mutter, then it didn't cause anything, right?
What if you move it back? So in other words, you moved it on top of it. And now you have that whole machlokas.
The
question is, did it grow? Did it grow?
Was it 200?
Did it grow 200? If it grew the 1/200th, then it becomes an issue. Yeah.
Okay,
let's go on. Hamasachat kavan. We're going to keep going. Hamasach. Now we're going to get into another case, which is it gets even trickier. Hamasachat gathlan shal chaver al gamet tvuasi shal chaver. What if I don't own anything? I take Shamsi's branch and put it over Dove's branch wheat. So now I don't own the wheat, I don't own the branch of the Geffen. So then what's the rule? Does the Tanna Kamma hold even in that case the grapes and the grain become prohibited? Or is the Tanna Kamma going to agree in this case that since I don't own any of it, I for sure I can't answer a Dover Shana Shali? So the Gemara brings a Raya from the Mishnah. We read the end of the Mishnah, remember? Remember the story Rabbi Yossi quoted to prove his position. To show that ain't order moisa davar shena shaloi. What was the case?
Shvius, right?
Case was a case of shvius. The case was he caused klayim in a chatzar of shvius. And he said, Rabbi Kiva said, ain't order moisa davar shena shaloi. And he quoted that story to prove his position. Now, if the Tanna Kamma is moida, that if I don't own either side, that in that case even Tanna Kamma will agree. Because he doesn't own either side, then what was the proof from Shvius? Rabbi Yossi proved nothing from Shvius. That wouldn't be a good proof. The fact that he quoted a case of Shvius, we'll read it inside, but I'm just speaking it out because it's so easy to understand the Raya, right? You hear what I'm proving? He's quoting the case of Shvius to prove his position that the Tanna Kamma is not right, but the case of Shvius, nobody owns anything. So that's a case of Masachak Shvasi Shachaber, Agamba Gathan Shachaber. So that's exactly, that's his right. Mishuina Manadol, let's prove it from here. On Rabbi Yossi, quotes the Mishnah, Maisbach Shazar, Sakami Bashvias, and Maisal Tiro, Kiba Omar, Aina Makhtar Shavashin Shalai, Harain Agamba Shalai, and Tvor Shalai, Vitasavas. And there you have it.
So maybe that's the only time that you can't do it, when you own neither, but if you own
That's the point. The point is that they obviously they have a machlokes. Even the Tanakhama is going to hold it, asers it, even if you don't own either side. That's the proof. Okay? Okay, let's go on to the halacha dalet. Ha'anas shazar esakarim. So here we have a robber. He goes ahead and he steals my field, and he plants klayim in my field. We're on 65A2, right? So he steals my field, and he plants klayim, and then guess what? Yotza milfanov. Eventually, it finally comes back to me, because whatever, he dies, or he runs into trouble with the law. I finally, after all these years, he had this real powerful, strong guy on my karka. I couldn't get rid of him, but now I can get my karka back. So now, I have klayim. He planted klayim on there. What's the rule? Am I mechuyev to run in there and take the klayim out? Can I just leave it grow? What's the rule? That's the Mishnah is going to deal with. So the Mishnah says, Koitzroi afilu b'moyed. You can harvest grain even during Chol HaMoed. So what's that mean?
If you leave it, it continues to grow and it's
yours. So there's a big note here. So let's see. So the Gemara is going to talk about whether you're obligated to remove it on Chol HaMoed or you're permitted. Let's see. Why are you permitted to do it on Chol HaMoed? Because it's a Davar HaAved. We all know that Davar HaAved is mutar on Chol HaMoed. Since if you're going to leave it grow there, it may become Aser. So therefore,
it's not Aser automatically?
It's not Aser automatically because you didn't plant it. It was never put there mutar. Remember,
so
we had
from the time that it takes bialis, it has to grow 1/200.
Let's see how tight it's going to be. Is it really that tight or? Can I take my time because after all, it was never Mirtsoini that it was put there.
If you take possession,
but how fast do I have to take care of it? That's the issue. Let's see. Let's look at the footnote. It's a long one. Let's see. Had it been prohibited to remove the klayim of klayim moed, the owner would not have been guilty of this offense because a klayim prohibits only willfully maintaining klayim. So if it was klayim moed and if the halacha was that I wasn't allowed to harvest it, then for sure it would have been mutter because even if it grows, it's not my fault I couldn't harvest it. It's Chol HaMoed. So no problem. So why are you allowed to, why is it mutter to harvest the grain of Chol HaMoed? He gives a reason as follows. The opinion of Rabbi Yisrael Shimon in the preceding Mishnah, one cannot render prohibitive that which is not his. Therefore, the vineyard did not become prohibited due to the robber's planting of the klayim. But if the owner maintains the klayim after the vineyard reverts to him, then after it increases 1/200, just like Dove said, it should be prohibited. Therefore, to prevent the vineyard from becoming prohibitive, klayak karem, the grain has to be removed before it grows 1/200. Now, it is permitted to perform otherwise forbidden labor on Chol HaMoed to prevent the davar ha'aveid. Accordingly, you're permitted to harvest the klayim grain on Chol HaMoed to prevent it, in order to remove it from the vineyard before it reaches the critical point. Okay, now, in the brackets, some commentators note, in actuality, had the law prohibited removing klayim produce on Chol HaMoed, the vineyard would not have been rendered prohibited, and no loss would have occurred. So we're having a problem here. You're telling me, you're going around in circles. You're telling me I'm allowed to harvest it because if you don't harvest it, it'll become usher once it grows 1/200. But on the other hand, you tell me that if it was usher for me to harvest it, it wouldn't have become usher. Because the only reason why I didn't harvest it is because it's usher to harvest on Chol HaMoed. So which comes first? You have to decide. Is it a davar ha'aveid? Is it not a davar ha'aveid? So what determines whether it's a davar ha'aveid?
The isser of the claim comes after the start of the isser of the malacha on Chol HaMoed.
No. You're talking about the timing of the Isurim. No. That's not the point. The point, you have to decide what is the determining factor. Do I say I've got a claim here, therefore I've got to cut it? Or do I say I don't have a claim here because I'm not allowed to cut it?
That's the question. It happens first.
Who says what happens first? That's the issue over here. That's what the commentators are saying. That if the law would have been that it's also to cut klayim on Chol HaMoed, it would not have been rendered prohibited, and there would have been a davar ha'aveid. Because unwilling maintenance of klayim, it's not it's not, it doesn't make an issue. Therefore, the owner's failure to remove the claim, which would have been due to circumstances beyond its control, would render it not, would not render it prohibited. Right? That's Tosfos Kivegar and Chazon Ish. Nevertheless, this is where his point is. No, there was no reason for the sages to prohibit the removal of the claim of Chalamoid, although this would make one's maintenance of the claim unwilling and thereby prevent a loss. In other words, what he's saying is the Chachamim are the arbiters of what's Osir on Chalamoid and what's not Osir. I'm also Chachamim to decide what's Osir, what's not Osir. So Chacham, in their wisdom, decided this is something that we can be matter, because as a malacha, as a violation of malacha on Chalamoid, it's not a violation because this is klayim, and it would be proper to remove it. So let's allow it, and he's going to have to remove it. And if he doesn't remove it, it will become usher, and therefore it's a davar ha'aved, and it falls in line with our rule of davar ha'aved. That's basically what this footnote is saying. All right. In the end here, he brings down an interesting thing that some Mefarshim say that we're talking about even a case where the produce will not increase 1/200th of Chalamoid. In other words, let's suppose it's a slow-growing object, and the owner will therefore not incur if he doesn't remove it. So nonetheless, they allowed him to remove it to avoid the appearance of illegally maintaining the claim. So it's more of a minor sign halacha. It's not, it's a whole different way of looking at it. Okay. So, how much is he required to pay a poil? Now, this is a general problem. Let's suppose you're being over a leisase. I mean, he didn't plant it. See, he wasn't over the leisase, I guess, but Makayim climb, is that a leisase? I guess it is, right? If I have climb in my yard, and I'm made aware of it, and I don't take care of it, I guess it's a leisase, I guess. How much are you mechuyev to pay to not to be over leisase? Everybody knows you got to give up kol mamonah, right? You have to not to be over leisase is very very chomer. So what is this question? How much are you mechuyev? How much are you required to pay workers? So it says, let's see here. In footnote 8, one is required to pay any amount of money to avoid transgressing a prohibition. So you should have to pay any amount of money to avoid transgressing the prohibition of maintaining klayim. The Mishnah, however, assumes there's a limit, because if the owner allows the klayim to remain due to the excessive cost of removing it, that's considered unwilling maintenance of the klayim and no prohibition is violated. In other words, it's only time there's an issur is if I want it. But if I don't want it, the only reason I'm doing this is the only reason I haven't done it is because they're charging so much money. So that's not called ritzoinah. So therefore, the Mishnah formulates a certain amount. Atshlish, so it's 1/3. Now, the Gemara is going to talk about the shaykh. 1/3, meaning 1/3 of the going rate. Let's suppose it's normally, $4. Shlish. $3 an hour. Let's suppose workers are $3. I'll make it easy. $3 an hour. So you're required to pay one shlish. You have to pay 1/3 of the amount over. So that would be $4 an hour. You'd be required to pay 1/3 above the going rate. That's what it says. The other possibility is shlish means 1/3 of the value of the produce. Okay. Yasser Mikan, more than that, you're not required to pay.
Where else do we have this concept of a shlish? I mean, it's, why is that the base?
Where did it come from?
Yeah.
Don't know. I'll tell you the truth. I'm not 100% sure. I have some theories, but I'm not sure.
Seems as though the way the Mefarshim learned it up, it's called a reasonable cost, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I think this is the shear by hit or mitzvah on shlish. Is that, am I correct? Yeah. So it might be connected to that shlish. And we're going to see in a second, there's another shlish. Okay, let's keep going. Koitza gedaka v'hoileth, and then you can do it yourself. Take your time. Do a little bit at a time. You get out every afternoon, cut some of that uprooted. I feel like harmoid, even though the removal will delay it even until after flamoid. Okay? How long is it termed the property of the robber, so the produce is prohibited by the climb he plants? In other words, This is a big chiddush over here. This Mishnah is telling us a huge chiddush, which means there is a point, even though we normally say kaka inan exelis, but there is a point where it's
power.
I've lost my claim to. I give you an example. The Yidden from the Holocaust in Poland. So my father-in-law's brother, and my father-in-law for that matter, they came from a farm, a 10-acre. He told us a 10-acre farm they had over there. They have no. They took it from them. They're never going to get it back. It's the shtak Hashem for them. It's not trying to get it back. So that once it reaches a certain point where it's nishtaka, it becomes the onus, and anything he plants after that point is taka usur and isur of plant. Okay, that's what it says. Misha yishka, from the time when the identity of the original owner becomes submerged, the public no longer refers to the vineyard as belonging to the original owner; they refer to it as belonging to the robber. Basically, it's nishtaka, the identity becomes, he calls it submerged. Well, that's the idea. It becomes forgotten. Yeah.
Because it comes from mishke, mashke.
Shakua is sunk. Shakua. It's a whole discussion here about yish and shinu rishos. It's a long sugya. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of raid over here. It's just not enough time to talk about it. Footnote 12. See the Maamar Kamis at length and see the sugya in Sukkah. We can't get into that. Rabba by Yaakov, I'll talk to Gemara. Rabba by Yaakov, Hashem Rabbi Yerkanon, Kaini Masnisa. This is what the Mishnah means. Mutal Kutsu Yafil Vamoid. It's permit mutter. It's allowed to. It's not obligatory. It's mutter. Okay?
Don't you have to do something to take away the Maamar Zayin?
In fact, he's saying it's not necessary. Not necessary. Okay. I'd come who nice in the poilim. I'd shlish. How much do you give the poilim? Or on 65b, give up to a shlish. Rav Chun over Rav Sheshes. Chana mer shlish v'sachar. 133% of the normal wage. Chana mer shlish domim. You'll go 1/3 of the value of the grapes and the grain and the vineyard on the workers to remove the client produce immediately. All right. So that's fine. Next, from what point, Misha Yishka, from when the identity is submerged. Rav Amar Bacha, Nishtaku Ba'olim, the identity of the original owner has been lost. V'lo Nisyoashu Ha'Bailim, even though they haven't given up, they haven't abandoned hope, they haven't seen Vayelo L'Chasar and Kiss, like Rashi says, right? Then, Yisurai Dvar Toiro, then the client are really Osir, Minat Torah, because the robber acquires legal title to the vineyard. Okay? So let's see what that means. The name of the owner fades from a vineyard. The robber acquires it. The kliyim he plants is prohibited. That he's abandoned hope. Rav Hacha teaches here, even if he had not expressed yush, once his identity has become submerged, it's certain that he has in fact abandoned hope of recovering it. Therefore, it's rendered prohibited. So, Mara Fulda's learning, the pshat is, that once it's in Shaku Bailam, who are you kidding? You gave up. Even though you didn't say it explicitly, we can assume you gave up. So therefore, Min HaTorah, it reverts to the other guy, right? Mm-hmm. Other people say, even if the owner denies that he's abandoned hope, he nonetheless assumes he really, in his heart, has abandoned hope. Okay, that's basically the same idea. Okay. Next. So that's Minat Torah. Nisyon Asho HaBailam, V'lo Nishtako HaBailam. But what if they had Yush, but it still has his identity associated with the field? Then Yisuron Midivrehen. Then the claim is also Midrabana. Because Minat Torah, it really belongs to the owner. Right? The claim is not prohibited biblically because biblically it's still probably the original owner. You can't render that which is not his osir. So the Gemara is going to say, V'yesh karko nigzeles, can land actually be stolen, allowing it to be acquired by a robber? It does not unless the original owner's name has faded. So the client produce is not the property of the robber, so it should not be prohibited, even mid-Rabbanon. What kind of Rabbanon is this? This is the Gemara's kash over here. How come the Rabbanon decided to create an Isra over here when it's Karkin and Exelis? So the Gemara answers, on Rav Law, Alpha Bishain, Karkin and Exelis, Yesh Yerushal Karkin. Even though Karkin is not Exelis, there's a concept of abandonment that does apply as far as Klai HaKerem is concerned. So, number eight, the rabbis prohibited Klai HaKerem after Yush, despite the fact that the vineyard remains the property of the original owner. The reason is that the vineyard seems to some people to belong to the robber. It's kind of, also it sounds like a Marasayan. Since the vineyard seems to belong to the robber, it looks as if the claim, in fact, is prohibited. Therefore, it appears like you're violating a prohibition, so the Rabbanan decided to make it awesome.
So what's the nafkamina if it is the anas is or not?
The nafkamina, whether it's the rice or the Rabbanan?
That's the nafkamina?
That's the nafkamina.
Because it's lotizu akar mecha, it has to be your care.
Yeah.
So if I come into your field, and I don't do the doraisa, the three seeds in my hand.
Okay.
But you have cucumbers, and then I come a couple of days later and I plant peppers, and then I bring some weed, and I bring whatever. I make a whole ganza. It's okay because it's not mine.
What do you mean it's not yours?
It's not mine. It's yours. It's your field.
You go into my field and you plant things which are Klein.
I plant pilaim in your backyard.
Right.
It
doesn't happen. Hold on a second.
Are you asking, is the maisa of the planting usser? Are you asking, is the produce become usser?
Both.
Yeah, he's making
both.
The action is not good.
The action, I didn't do it. I didn't do the doraisa. I didn't take the seeds and pull them together into the thing. I planted one thing, and then the next day I came and planted another thing, and then the next day I came and planted another thing in your backyard. So first of all, am I over?
Are you using your own seeds? So you're using your own seeds, and you're using my karka.
Right.
And
it says
lotizrak. I mean, I have to think about it. This is a complicated case.
Because this is what we're talking about.
Yeah, in a certain sense, yes.
The anas doesn't own the land.
Are you kicking me out of my ground?
No.
In your case, so you're saying, forget about it.
You're not an honest.
Okay, so you're an honest, non-honest.
Right.
So you come into my field, you plant stuff, and then you go to chakras.
Right.
So.
And then the next day I do the same thing, and the next day I do the same thing.
I don't know why you have to complicate it. Let's just take this.
Do it at one time.
No, do it at one time. It's the doraisa. I'm not taking the seeds and planting.
Why is it the doraisa if it's not his ground?
So that's the question.
I'm mixing two things together.
Yeah, let's forget it. It's not my karka. Let's suppose we go into a field that's hefker. If I go to the Shusarabim and I throw the seeds down on the Shusarabim, it's not my ground.
So are you over
Sizra Karam? I would say probably not. Sizra Karamoha. It's got to be your karam. It's not your karam. I don't know. I think there's a lot of different things going on over there. As far as whether the produce becomes usser, I think that's going to depend on this shiloh over here. It's not nishtak Hashem. You're talking about where it's my field, so it's still my field. So you're not going to ask for the things that belong to me. But nonetheless, if we let it grow...
If you're Mekayim, you might be over on Kilai.
Yeah. So, okay, I don't know. It's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't want to answer right now. Yeah. Okay, let's go to let's do the last halacha here today. Haruah. Halacha hey. Haruah she'il ala es hagafonim agavet for. So you have the wind cracking grapevines, and that causes them to lean over standing grain. In other words, these grapevines are avkahaktet tsaris. They're almost done, almost they're dried out, and the wind is blowing them over my neighbors, not my neighbors, but over grain. Yigdur miyad. So it says you should cut down the vines so they don't lean over. Now they say in theory all you have to really do is take the vines and move them back to where they were, But the Mishnah doesn't recommend that, number one, because there's no point to it, because it's not worth anything. It's already cracked in half, already, you know, it's not going to produce anything. And number two, we're afraid it's going to happen again. In fact, some say yidgar doesn't mean to cut them, but yidgar means to put up a fence so that they won't blow over again, because we're afraid it's going to happen again. So the emiru oinus, if an accident happens, meaning something happened to prevent him from being able to cut the vines. In the footnote, it says either he became an oval, so an oval is also to do malacha, and therefore he wasn't able to get around to it, or more practical example, less dismal.
The contractor
never showed up. More shkiach. So if the contractor never showed up, which is, it calls that an oinus, right? That's an oinus. If an oinus happens, mutter, then the grain is still permitted, even if it grows, right? Standing grain that leans under a vine. So in other words, you plant it outside of the share. Let's suppose the share is 6 tefachim, right? A single vine, and you honored the 6 tefach distance, and you planted it outside of the 6 tefachim, and it grew in to at an angle. It grew in there. So what's the rule? So if it came to yarks, anything was vegetables. Machazir, you turn it back away from the vine, and Makash, it doesn't render the grain prohibited. It says here, in a Makadish, even if you did not turn it back. So the reason for that, it says over here in 14, that the grain or vegetables emerge from the ground elsewhere, only its upper part leans beneath the grapevine, so it's not prohibited. It's different when the vine extends to overhang the grain. That, the commission said, that it will make it prohibited. But in this case, it's not the same. All right, so what exactly, you know, these fine differences, you can't compare one from the other. So again, so if you have the vine and it grows over the wheat, it's going to oster the wheat. If the wheat leans in underneath the vine, it doesn't oster. Okay, that's the rule. So when does it become prohibited? What? It has to do with the shoresh. The shoresh is outside, so therefore we go bust the shoresh by this royam, whatever the reason is. When does it become osur mishatashlish? When it reaches a third of its size. In other words, if it's just growing in the beginning, so it won't become osur. It has to reach a third of its size to become considered something tefuah, right? Anavim and grapes mishiyasu kabal lavanim becomes the size of a white bean. Now,
once it gets to that point, then it needs 1 to 100.
Right. Now, this is very difficult because we had earlier, the Gemara, let's see.
The starting point of when it's considered a grain or when it's to a certain point. It's not.
Do you remember?
An inch above the ground,
there's a problem. This is a problem, this halacha, because we had a problem where, remember we said that if it was like grass, then you just turn it over. Remember that?
Yeah.
That you turn it over
and it dies.
And that was not shlish.
That was before.
So how come over here it requires that? So they asked that question. 1 second. Someone asked this question. I know for sure. I don't know. Okay, it's already 9:35. I don't hold you guys up too much, but I know there's somebody asked this question. I don't know why I can't find it right now. Maybe it's in the Hebrew? I'm not sure. You know what? It's probably in the Mishnayos. That's probably where I saw the problem. I'll find out what the answer is tomorrow. Lee Netter and bring you the answer. The end of the Mishnah is, if it's all dried out, I know, 66/8, the top line. It's all dried out. It does not become awesome. Okay. Thank you for joining me tonight, everybody.
You have wheat growing, right?